morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Bacon Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on the program, Robert Knott is going to be with us, and we're also going to be speaking with people from the Bali Art Project. Right now, I'd like to welcome, joining us by telephone, Norma Moffitt. She is the author of the book Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and she will be at Garcia Street Books tomorrow at 5 in the afternoon. Welcome, Norma, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be with you. But I believe that Garcia Street book event is at 2 o'clock.
Oh, well, then there was the wrong information on the website. Thank you for correcting it. So, Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, what is the origin of this just infinitely cute dog breed?
I'm glad you said infinitely cute, because they are. Yes, the origin is really unknown, as it is with most dog breeds. But in fact, all Spaniels, as the name implies, probably originated around the area of Spain. And so that's why they are known as Spaniels. But of course, they've been refined over the years with other breeds.
And so there are many historical anecdotes, which you talk about in your book, about King Charles, about these Spaniels. One of them is about Mary, Queen of Scots. Can you tell us that story?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Yes, poor Mary, Queen of Scots. Of course, she was in the way of Queen Elizabeth II, and so she was a rival. And Queen Elizabeth, being the very strong woman she was, decided that this lady was going to have to be executed. So on the day of her execution, Mary, Queen of Scots, was taken to the block, because the way of executing aristocrat was by the axe. It was supposed to be more humane instead of hanging, which I don't think is very humane either. But anyway, she put her head on the block, and her head was taken off. Mary, Queen of Scots, was older than most people believe, because at that time, her bright red wig fell off, and she showed white hair. And then, after she was dead, out from underneath her skirt crept a little spaniel. And this little spaniel had been her companion. And that's the story of the spaniel of Mary, Queen of Scots.
And then the spaniel died of heartbreak 2 days later.
That is the story. I doubt that it's true. I'm sure that somebody took that little dog away and took good care of it.
And it was probably perfectly happy.
I would like to think that that is the truth.
Right. So, what were these dogs originally bred for? They seem to be adorable little pets. Are they also bred for some kind of working?
Their original purpose was for hunting, just like any other spaniel, and they would have been taken out to hunt small birds. This was their original purpose.
And so I guess it's what you call a bird dog.
Exactly.
Do people still use them for that?
In England, they do. It's not a common thing, but in fact, they do. In certain places, you'll see, and there's still plenty of countryside in England, despite it being such a small place, that they still do hunt with spaniels. But of course, because, as you say, they're so beautiful and so pretty and so gorgeous in every way, that people took them into their houses, and that was the end of hunting and the beginning of just having a love companion.
How did you find your first, I suppose all the people who write these books, and this is part of the Your Happy, Healthy Pet series of books, and there's one for virtually every breed, I think, you must have had these for a long time, this type of Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. How did you come across this dog?
Well, quite by accident, in fact, because I was a Labrador Retriever breeder before that, from 1969 to 81, and then I was teaching obedience training, and I had a lot of little dogs in my classes, and I was not familiar with little dogs, and I loved the Labrador so much, I thought, well, it was difficult to know how to deal with them, not the same kind of training at all, so I thought I'd better have a little dog. And a friend had come over from England with Cavalier King Charles. She was a Labrador breeder also, and I went to see her, and there was this little bright-eyed dog puppy, and I just fell in love with it, and that was the beginning, quite by accident.
How did you become a dog breeder in the first place? That's such an interesting thing to be, to have such a love for one particular breed and to breed that dog.
It's a wonderful hobby. it's just, it's the same as anything else. People love horses and they get involved. People love dogs and they get involved. But I think it all goes back to the time when I was very small and I lived in a little village called Brinklow. That's the name of my kennel. And my father always had dogs. He had a Jack Russell Terrier. I had mice. I had guinea pigs. I had all sorts of animals. But the dogs were my main concern and the ones I most interacted with. And I just grew up that way, loving dogs.
How did the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel get its name?
There's a bit of a dispute about that, in fact, because some people believe that they were named for the Cavalier King. Charles II was known as the Cavalier King. And then I had an email from a breeder who had been in Cavaliers for donkey's years in England, and she said that it was not that at all, that because there are two types of toy spaniels, the English toy spaniel with the round head and the short face, like the Chinese breeds, and the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, she said that the Cavalier was so called because of his natural nose, which is like any other dog's nose, not too long, not too short, and that the other breed, the English toy, was known as the Roundhead. So because there were Cavaliers and Roundheads, who of course were rivals in the Civil War, they named the Cavalier after the Cavalier as opposed to the Roundheads, which were the English toy spaniels. Doesn't make much sense to me, but that's the theory.
Okay. We're talking to Norma Moffat. Her book is called Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. So one of the characteristics of this breed, I'm not sure I've ever met one. I certainly haven't known one of these kinds of dogs very well.
Well, then you'll have to come to Garcia Street Books,
won't
you?
Are you going to bring one with you?
We are bringing, yes. My friends Dan and Helen Fine, I'm staying in Placitas in their lovely home, and they have Tessa, who is a ruby, which is the red color of the Cavalier, and then four puppies. One is a black and tan and three ruby, and I believe we're taking these puppies with us. These are half-grown puppies, about 6 months old.
There can't possibly be anything cuter than, except for perhaps a Jack Russell puppy, which is what I have. So when you write a book like this, there, it's kind of all the books are in this series. You know, first they talk about the characteristics of that breed, but then they talk about keeping your pet safe and healthy. And that's pretty much the same, and training it too, and that's pretty much the same across all dog breeds. Is it not, or isn't it?
It is. It is. I'm sure it is. All dogs need certain numbers of vaccinations. All dogs need exercise. All dogs need the right type of food. These things are quite general, yes.
And so when you write a book like this, what are the characteristics specific to this type of dog?
I suppose it's for one thing, it's the looks. The second thing is the temperament. It's really quite remarkable in the Cavalier. So it is the characteristics of the dog itself that are the important part of writing a book like this. How it interacts with people.
And how do they interact with people?
Well, it's like having a little person in the house, quite frankly, because they're devoted to you. I suppose I've had a lot to do with many breeds of dogs over the years, but the Cavalier is quite exceptional because they have these enormous, big, round, brown eyes that you could just melt. You know, they just melt your heart. And they just attach themselves to you. These dogs attach themselves to you, and there's nobody else in the world for them.
One of the problems with pure breeds, as many of us know, who have them either just by choice or just because they, like, all my dogs are purebred and they just showed up. I would gladly have a mutt. It doesn't matter to me what kind of dog I have because
no.
I love dogs. But part of the problem is that they have some often weaknesses due to overbreeding. Is that the case with these dogs?
There are genetic diseases in every breed. I think the Cavalier, I did go to a seminar on this not too long ago, and there are as many as 100 different genetic diseases that various breeds can have. And I think Cavaliers probably are about halfway up there. But the major one for the Cavalier is mitral valve disease, which is a weakness of one of the valves of the heart. And so responsible breeders check their stock with cardiologists every year to make sure that they're breeding healthy puppies. And this is a prime concern for me. I think above everything else, the Health and Education Committee in our national club is the most important one.
So do you live in the U.S.? Do you live in England?
No, I live in Canada.
Oh, okay. And are these dogs popular, more popular in any one country or region?
I suppose the greatest number of them is found in England, and of course that's where, if when you want to improve your stock, you would go there to find the very best that you can. Yes, I would say in England they're very popular indeed. I think popularity is not a good thing in a breed, but I still think that it's worth having a Cavalier. It's just that you have to be aware that it's a great responsibility to have a dog.
How are they with children?
Excellent. Really excellent. I suppose what I could say about the Cavalier is it's the most adaptable dog, because whether you live in the city or the country or the suburbs, or whether you're a person living alone or a family, this little dog will adapt to any lifestyle.
And how are they with other dogs?
Usually very companionable. Of course, when I started out, my Cavaliers were always interacting with Labrador Retrievers, so they got used to the big dogs. Sometimes if they don't see many big dogs, they will bark at a big dog, but other than that, if the other dog is friendly, then they will be friendly too.
We're talking to Norma Moffat. Now, when you write a book like this for this series, how do they choose you, or how does the whole process work of being the spokesperson for a book that really is going to be very widely distributed? How did you get that job?
It was very interesting. I had written a number of articles for the magazine Dogs in Canada. This is our national magazine allied with the Canadian Kennel Club. And I had written on establishing a small kennel and various other articles for them. And so I believe Wiley Publishing Company got in touch with the Canadian Kennel Club and asked. And at that time, I had a very good friend who was editor of our Dogs in Canada magazine called Alan Resnick. He now lives in California. And he telephoned me and said, would you be interested in writing this book? Because he knew that I had written several articles. I said, well, I'll think about it. So I thought about it and thought, why not? Why shouldn't I do that? So I did.
What are some of the basic tips that you can give people about getting their dogs to behave properly? I know that, and you say in this book about the Spaniels, that it's so easy to spoil them because they're just completely adorable. You just want to spoil them, but you'd better not.
Yes, and in fact, I always recommend that when your puppy has had two vaccinations, usually at the age of 8 weeks and 12 weeks, that if you have access, that you take your puppy to a class. And there's two advantages here. Number one is it teaches you to gain your dog's attention while there's a lot going on. And the other advantage is it teaches your dog that there are plenty of other dogs in the world and a lot of them are bigger than them.
Before we go, I want to ask you one more thing, and that is if you want to get a purebred dog, a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel or any other purebred dog, what are some tips? Is it best to go through rescue, to a breeder, to how do you find a good, healthy dog?
Well, if you want to really do a good turn, but mind you, there are not very many rescue Cavaliers because I believe breeders are very, very careful about where they go. The first thing is to decide whether you want a puppy or an older dog. An older dog, a rescue dog, would be wonderful if you can find one. And the other thing to do is to get in touch with the club. There are two Cavalier clubs in the United States. One is the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel USA, and that is a private club, not allied with AKC, but they have a very strong code of ethics. And so if you can locate that club and get in touch with them and find out, they probably have names of people who may be having puppies in the near future. And the other club is the American Cavalier King Charles Spaniel Club, and I'm sure you can find them both on the web. And then you get in touch with those clubs and find out who are the breeders to get in touch with.
Norma Moffat is the author of the book Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and she will be at Garcia Street Books tomorrow afternoon, Saturday at 2 in the afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you indeed. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR.